Blog Talk Radio.
Block Talk Radio Nation, you are tuned into the Cutting Room Floor, and I am LeVar, and it's good to be back with you again on this Monday, June 20th, actually, for a lot of you going through the summer weather patterns. Hope that everybody's doing all right. A lot of rain here in Chicago today, and more on the way. We'll have more on that in a minute. Kind of a potpourri show tonight. Want to actually get into a couple of things and a couple of interesting articles of note out there in case you haven't heard about it in the news. But first, want to get you caught up on the day's events and what's going on in the news. From Washington tonight, President Barack Obama will announce the critical next steps in America's decades-long war in Afghanistan on Wednesday, outlining both a plan to start bringing thousands of U.S. troops home next month and a border withdrawal blueprint aimed at giving Afghans control of their own security in 2014. But even as the president finalizes those plans, there's divisions in his administration, with military leaders favoring only a gradual reduction in troops, but other advisors advocating a significant decrease in the coming months. Administration officials say that the president is still working through details on how many troops will start leaving Afghanistan in July. His self-imposed deadline for bringing the drawdown, he's considering a range of options presented to him last week by General David Petraeus, the top U.S. and NATO commander in Afghanistan. According to White House spokesman Jay Carney, he said today that he's finalizing his decision and, quote, he's reviewing his options. President Obama is expected to make Wednesday's announcement in Washington. On Thursday, he will visit troops at Fort Drum, the upstate New York military base that is home to the 10th Mountain Division, one of the most frequently deployed divisions to Afghanistan and Iraq. While much of the attention is focused on how many troops will leave Afghanistan next month, the more telling aspects of the president's decision center on what happens after July, particularly how long the president plans to keep 30,000 surge forces he sent in 2009. Now, there's a growing belief that the president must at least map out the initial withdrawal of the surge troops when he addresses the public. Whether those forces should come out over the next 8 to 12 months or slowly trickle out over a longer time is hotly debated in Washington. Military commanders want to keep as many of those forces in Afghanistan for as long as possible, arguing that too fast a withdrawal could undermine the fragile security gains in the fight against the Taliban insurgency in Afghanistan and the al-Qaeda training ground for the September 11th attacks. There's also concerns about pulling out a substantial number of U.S. forces as the heightened summer fighting season gets underway. Retiring Defense Secretary Robert Gates has said that he believes the initial drawdown should be modest. But other advisors are backing a more significant withdrawal that starts in July and proceeds steadily through the following months. Nat Camp believes that slow yet steady security gains in Afghanistan, combined with the death of Osama bin Laden and the U.S. success of dismantling much of the al-Qaeda network in the country, give the president an opportunity to make larger reductions this year. And, of course, there's broad public support for starting to withdraw U.S. troops. According to an Associated Press GFK poll last month, 80% of Americans say that they approve of the president's decision to begin withdrawal of combat troops in July and end U.S. combat operations in Afghanistan by 2014. Just 15% disapprove. Now, the president has tripled the number of U.S. forces in Afghanistan since taking office, bringing the total there to about 100,000. The 30,000 troop surge he announced at the end of 2009 came with the condition that he should, when he would, start bringing forces home in July of this year. Now, the president took months to settle on the surge strategy. This time around, aides say the process is far less formal and that the president is far more knowledgeable about the situation in Afghanistan than he was in 2009, his first year in office. The president also said that the July withdrawal will be, quote, significant, though aides haven't quantified, just how many. They do say that the president sees the initial drawdown in July as part of a larger strategy aimed at ending the U.S. combat mission in Afghanistan by the end of 2014 and turning security responsibility over to the Afghans. Also in Washington today, the Supreme Court blocked the largest sex discrimination lawsuit in U.S. history on Monday, siding with Walmart and against up to 1.6 million female workers in a decision that makes it harder to mount large-scale bias claims against the nation's other huge companies, too. Justices all agreed that the lawsuit against Walmart Stores Incorporated could not proceed as a class action in its current form, reversing the decision by the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco. By a 5-4 vote along ideological lines, the court said that there were too many women and too many jobs at Walmart to wrap into one lawsuit. According to Justice Anton Scalia, in his majority opinion, he says, in quote, because respondents provide no convincing proof of a company-wide discriminatory pay and promotion policy, we have concluded that they have not established the existence of any common question. Theodore Boutros Jr., Walmart's lawyer, said that the decision also would affect pending class action crimes and claims against Costco and others. Companies as varied as the big Wall Street firm Goldman Sachs and Company, electronics giant Toshiba America Incorporated, and Cigna Healthcare Incorporated also face class action claims from women they employ. Some breaking news this evening. A passenger jet crashed late Monday on a highway in northwestern Russia, killing 44 people. Officials say that 8 people survived the crash. The Tu-134 plane belonging to the Russair airline crash-landed en route from Moscow to the city of Petrozavodsk, according to their emergency ministry spokesman, who told the Associated Press this tonight. The ministry said the website statement that 44 people were killed, 8 people who survived the crash, including a 10-year-old boy, were hospitalized in critical condition. There's no immediate explanation for the crash, but the Interfax news agency quoted the airport director as saying that there were, quote, unfavorable weather conditions. The plane crashed on its final approach to the airport, landing 1 to 2 kilometers or about a mile short of the runway. It was unclear if the plane had attempted to land on the road or just happened to fall there. And, of course, for those of you who do not know, Petrozavodsk is in Karelia province near the Finnish border, about 400 miles northwest of Moscow. Investors largely put aside their concerns about the Greek financial crisis Monday and focused instead on value. Stocks rose broadly after the market shook off its longest weekly losing streak in nearly a decade. The Dow turned about the S&P 500 close to its average level over the prior 200 days. So long as the index doesn't sink far below that level, many technical traders see it as a sign to start buying stocks again. The S&P is now 6% below the 2011 high it reached on April 29th. The S&P 500 index rose 6.86 points, or about 0.5% to close at 1278.36. The Dow Jones Industrial Average added about 76.2 points, or 0.6%, to close at 12,080.38, and the NASDAQ Composite gained 13.18, or 0.5%, to close at 2629.66. Healthcare companies like Aetna, Inc., and Humana rose 1%, the largest gain among the 10 industry groups that make up the S&P 500 index. Financial companies like Morgan Stanley, which lost 1.9%, were the only group to lose ground. The S&P notched its third straight day of gains, the longest stretch of increases in the stock market for nearly a month. The index eked out a tiny gain last week, breaking a 6-week losing streak, driven by concerns that U.S. economic growth would falter in the second half of the year and that Greece's debt crisis would spread. It was the S&P's longest slide since 2002. In local news here in Chicago tonight, Cook County Sheriff Tom Dart said that within the next 2 weeks, the department's website will include the photographs of up to 1,100 parents and his investigators are looking for in child support cases. Dart said that the site would include the names and last known addresses of the deadbeat dads and a handful of deadbeat moms being sought, and he encouraged people to help the department find them. Dart said that while people who owe child support often try to keep their whereabouts secret from authorities by doing things like only paying for items in cash, they do not always move far away. He said 80 men picked up in the last couple of weeks were located in Cook County. As a result, he said he's optimistic that when people punch in their own zip codes in the site, they may be led to photographs that include someone they recognize. The site on Monday had the photographs of about 30 deadbeat dads for whom arrest warrants have been issued for contempt of court following their failure to pay child support. The 80 men owed a total of around $1.7 million, including one who owned a barbershop and owed $213,000. Sheriff Dart said when officers went to the home of another man who owed $60,000, they found $44,000 in a bag, a few assault rifles, and other weapons. Also here in Chicago, after the 5-month post-mortem about the blizzard of 2011, Chicago's top emergency officer was asked Monday how he intends to prevent another shutdown on Lakeshore Drive. Gary Schenkel's answer had nothing to do with the 12-page report's proposal to install cuts in median planters along the drive to provide access for emergency equipment and give stranded motorists a place to turn around, nor did Schenkel mention the city's decision to identify, quote, systematic triggers for shutting down Lake Shore Drive, or install four additional cameras to bolster the 13 already monitoring conditions along the drive. He says, in quote, we're going to pray a lot and hope that God doesn't dump another 40 inches of snow on us. Asked whether anybody needs to be taken to the woodshed for what happened on Lakeshore Drive, Schenkel replied, quote, absolutely not. Taking a look at Chicago weather. Tomorrow, AccuWeather says few thunderstorms, some severe. Highs will reach about 86 degrees. Tomorrow night, a little around 70. On Wednesday, a couple of thunderstorms, according to AccuWeather, a high of 80 and a low of 62. Right now, it's 69 degrees at O'Hare. Taking a look at entertainment news on this day, some sad news for fans of the television show Jackass. Jackass star Ryan Dunn, who along with his castmates made Americans cringe and snicker through vulgar stunts in their multi-million-dollar TV and movie franchise, was killed on early Monday in a fiery car crash. He was 34. Dunn, who is a daredevil, who gained notoriety for diving into a sewage tank and performing other unsavory stunts, was driving his 2007 Porsche in suburban Philadelphia when it careened off the road, flipped over a guardrail, and crashed into the woods before bursting into flames. A passenger, Zachary Hartwell, 30, of Westchester, Pennsylvania, was also killed, and speed may have been a factor in the crash. The force of impact shattered the vehicle into several twisted and blackened pieces, leaving the Porsche 911 GT3 unrecognizable except for a door that was thrown from the crash and not incinerated. A 100-foot-long tire skid marked where the car left the roadway. Dunn appeared on MTV shows such as Jackass and Viva La Bam in the three Jackass big screen adaptations. He was also the star of his own MTV show, Homewrecker, and it just began hosting the show Proving Ground on the G4 cable network. Also in entertainment news this evening, the legendary white dress seen billing under Marilyn Monroe in an iconic image of the 1950s Hollywood was sold at auction for $4.6 million, shattering estimates. That dress, which was worn by the star in the 1955 film The Seven-Year Itch, had been expected to fetch between $1 and $2 million. But the sale Saturday, part of a collection of Hollywood memorabilia held by actress Debbie Reynolds, saw Monroe's subway dress, now cream-colored from age, sold for $4.6 million, or $5.5 million, which added fees. In sports, Rafael Nadal opened his Wimbledon title defense with a convincing victory Monday, beating Michael Russell 6-4, 6-2, 6-2 on, quote, a fantastic day, while his parents watched for the Royal Box. In keeping with tradition, the defending men's champion played the first match on center court at the All England Club, and the top-ranked Spaniard put on a worthy performance to begin the 125th edition of the championships. Five-time women's champion Venus Williams, back on her favorite grass surface, swept into the second round as well with a 6-3, 6-1 win over 97th-ranked Akgal Aminurudova of Uzbekistan. The American also made a fashion statement wearing a one-piece play suit with cut-out sleeves that exposed part of her back. And on a day when rain washed out 31 matches on the outside courts, fourth-seeded Andy Murray also moved into the second round. He defeated Daniel Gaminso Tarver into four sets in a match played entirely under the retractable roof of center court. And that's a look at some of the stories this evening that are making headlines. And now we continue on with Cutting Room Floor and a couple of things tonight that we have seen across the news wires that some of you may not or may not know. There is actually an article out, according to Tom and Ray Magliazzi of Car Talk, an article for cars.com, the top 10 most annoying things other drivers do. Now, I know you and I, who normally are always out driving about, we pound the steering wheel, we swear, and we curse, and we flip our finger, probably the one that we're not supposed to, at the next driver whenever they tend to do something that annoys us. According to Tom and Ray, the top 10 things that are annoying is one, talking on a cell phone, which is entirely dangerous. A lot of states now have, if you don't know, a rule on talking and texting with heavy fines for those who are caught. Number two on that list was driving too fast for road conditions. Of course, we all know that one. Just because the speed limit is 65 doesn't mean it's always the right speed. You know, snow, ice, and rain can dramatically decrease your car's braking and handling abilities. According to them, a lot of people have said on that list that that is the number two most annoying driver habit. Number three, I know this one, not cleaning the snow off your cars, which is also dangerous in itself. I always said you got to ticket somebody, whoever does that, and it's ridiculously true in the wintertime in the city. Some of you are guilty of that. You can raise your hands. Number four, not signaling when turning or changing lanes or leaving a signal on. The number five thing, most annoying, leaving your high beams on. Now, you know, when driving at night, it introduces a variety of risks, all related to the fact that your vision becomes limited. The less well you can see, the less well you can drive. So when someone comes cruising past you and shines the equivalent of a 100,000 candle power lighthouse directly into your retinas, it's definitely being more than a little annoying. It's compromising your ability to drive safely. And that is definitely number five on the list. Number six, faulty equipment. You know, they say saving money by putting off repairs is a noble act of cheapskating. But when deferring maintenance means that you're starting to compromise your own safety or others around you, that's when we get annoyed. Taking two spaces in the parking lot is another thing. Staying in the far left lane, not acknowledging making a mistake or overreacting to an honest mistake, and dangerous loads improperly secured. So if you're traveling behind somebody who just bought that brand new table and had it up on the car, and they also decide to add probably 15 mattresses and a ton of other things, and driving at 75 miles an hour while the twine or bungee cord is loosely holding everything together. So it's a pretty good look for Tom and Ray about the 10 most of driving habits that are annoying. Taking a look at the weekend box office I normally have for you on this Monday. Top five movies this weekend. At number five, The Hangover Part 2, brought in $10 million at the box office this weekend. X-Men First Class finished at number four, $11.9 million. At number three, Mr. Popper's Penguins with Jim Carrey, raked in $18.4. Super 8, Steven Spielberg film, finished at number two with $21.4 million. And the number one movie, now I could not get this, and I would think that, you know, Hollywood will be jumping up and down, but I'm guessing because of how much you spent on it, is probably why they're not too happy. Green Lantern bought in with a, in quote, a modest $53.1 million over the weekend. Go figure. In a day in which $53.1 million, they will be lucky enough, it's considered by Hollywood standards modest. New Music Tuesday, New Music DVD, or New DVD Tuesday coming up, and for those of you that don't know, out on music, on the music side, CD side, Pitbull has his new album, Planet Pit, coming out. Weird Al Yankovic, how long has it been since we heard from him? Coming out with a new album called Alpocalypse. Get it? Alpocalypse? Yeah. Justin Moore, country album, Outlaws Like Me. Bon Iver, and I've never heard of Bon Iver. I guess I have to look up something or I missed something. But he's coming out with a self-titled album. And then Michael Bolton coming out with a new album, Gems, the Duets Collection. He's been on TV a lot over the last few days. And tomorrow, our album Spotlight of the Week, Jill Scott, coming out with a new album called The Light of the Sun. So definitely a lot of good picks there for New Music Tuesday. Now, on New DVD Tuesday, the Liam Neeson January Jones project entitled Unknown is coming out. The Adjustment Bureau, which was with Matt Damon and Emily Blunt, that will be out. Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Roderick Rules, the Ewan McGregor movie, The Island, and then a couple of TV series out on DVD tomorrow. That's the sixth season of The Closer and the seventh and final season of Medium. So all of those coming out tomorrow. So if you're out and about and you're at the store, you can actually pick it up and enjoy. And I've never seen any of those, and I feel kind of bad because this is one of those things where I'm one of those people where I guess I have to watch back at the beginning. And it's kind of weird, and I'm going to admit to you, Blog Talk Nation, that I'm one of those people where if I'm not interested in the movie, chances are I'm probably not going to see it. Now, I will still admit to you, I got to be one of the few people in on this earth that has yet to have seen, what was that movie, I think, last year that, you know, it was out in 3D, I think it was with the Blue People. You know what I'm talking about. I know it's been out on cable. I know it's been on HBO. I have not seen it. I'm really bad. I guess I need to go to the movies with somebody, too. I take going by myself, but when I do, I try and catch something, and I said that this summer I would try and catch at least two or three good movies. I guess I will have to go to my list now to look and see what's actually out or what actually tickles my fancy. But it's one of those things where I'm bad at it. TV shows, now if I catch it, Seinfeld, didn't really watch it much the first run. Maybe the last season or two, used to watch it then and there, but loved it in reruns. Same as for Curb Your Enthusiasm. Never really watched it much, never really cared for it. Now that it's in syndication, love it. So, you know, a lot of TV shows, it's kind of weird. You always pick it up when it airs in syndication and goes on and on and on and on. Another interesting article, I'm going to leave that one for last. But the 10 best cities for families, an article out by parenting.com. And at number 10, the best city for family, Louisville, Kentucky. And they talk about how it offers pasture-rich grasslands and Midwestern city culture, and how the affordable housing means that you can live comfortably amid lots of parkland and top-notch schools. At number 9, Seattle, Washington. It says how it's the hotbed of reading, named one of the most literate cities in America, although they do get a bad rap for its rainfall. But they say that when the sun comes out and the weather is mild, it's perfect for heading to the nearly 5,500 acres of parks. At number 8, Omaha, Nebraska, which moves up a notch from 9th place on last year's list. They said, this quaint Midwestern city with the Missouri River winding through it has strong roots in Native American culture, as well as a historic African-American music scene with a vibrant jazz presence. Did not know that. At number 7, Honolulu, Hawaii. Of course, we all know Honolulu or anywhere in Hawaii will be pretty good. You'll think that would be at number 1. And how they're saying how it's much more than just the center of Hawaiian culture, but it's, you know, it just also has a lot in terms of theater, music, clean air, loads of sun and surf, and how the state obesity rates are well below the national average, which makes it a seriously healthy city for raising a family. And they also say it has a strong economy, which is kind of something that you really don't hear much about Hawaii. At number 6, Madison, Wisconsin, which ranked 3rd on the list last year. They said that Madison gets the cool green light for loads of bike trails, lakes, food co-ops, and farmers markets, including the Dane County Farmers Market at Capitol Square, which is held Saturdays at the foot of the State House. At number 5, Des Moines, Iowa, and how it ranks in the top 10 for both education and health, offering kids the opportunity to experience city life in the midst of America's farmland. And how they're also saying that budding engineers and biologists will enjoy the Science Center of Iowa, and nothing beats the clear night skies of the Iowa Plains for stargazing. At number 4, a place where I once lived in, Minneapolis, St. Paul, how jogging and bike paths wound around 13 miles of shoreline, earning Minneapolis the destination or the designation of being a bike-friendly city from the League of American Bicyclists. And I will tell you, it is definitely, when the weather is out and it's nice, there are tons of people around biking and walking. At number 3, Boston, Massachusetts, which made the top 10 list for education and ranked high in the health category as well. Boston public schools spent a whopping $23,000 per student. The national average is $9,000, by the way. And how it's also home to a lot of world-class medical institutions. And number 2, Austin, Texas. It keeps its second place ranking from last year, and they call it a way cool, progressive city in a warm and sunny climate. City pools stay open year-round, and bass are always biting at the town lake. In the number 1 city for families, I think you and I are both going to drop out of our chairs, but number 1, Washington, D.C. Now, they say that the history of the government and the breathtaking architecture and inspiring monuments, and it says you don't have to be a child to get an amazing education in the city. Our nation's capital is also known for its plentitude of museums. In fact, there are 44, second only to New York. So they say if your kid enjoys visiting the National Air and Space Museum, imagine fostering his love of airplanes with trips to nearby Gravelly Point Park for front seat views of the takeoffs and landings at Reagan National Airport. Which I can see from a historical standpoint, that's one of the 10 best cities. And finally today, I don't know how to bring this to you, but according to Sean at Yahoo.com, a new article that came out, your car, which is home to just about everything you can put into it. But according to a new major sex study, 48% of Americans think that the automobile is the most exciting place to get it on. I sound like Bobby Eubanks, I don't know why. The annual survey commissioned by Trojan Condoms, fancy that, also found that city dwellers in Los Angeles and Houston have the most sex. I guess it's driving town, but they say blame our movie mythology. The car has been a co-star in countless sex scenes, and much of the time, it's the most memorable player. And they said that moving car sex is something that looks very easy and very tempting when it's done on a soundstage, but don't be fooled. It's impossible in practice. Proves in the amount of instructional websites and videos teaching people how to have car sex on the web. It literally is a manual, I guess. And they said that when movies want to cross over from fantasy to reality, they become a driver's ed PSA for why not to have sex in the car. The Onion AV Club rounded up a list of flicks that prove that that proved that oral sex is a bad idea in a moving vehicle, but that doesn't stop people from trying. And I guess there was a story this week about a couple who was arrested for allegedly going 85 while doing 99. And that interesting study, please don't ask me how that actually got pulled, but it just came out and it just showed. So there you have it. Sex in the car, while we all think that it's pretty old, it's still something that's quite new. But I want to take this opportunity, for those of you who are listening, to let you know and to thank you so much for listening to our broadcast, and we've got a lot of good things coming up. But I want to take this announcement, or this time while we have it, to kind of announce the plans here on out for what we're doing here. And in the meantime, you know, like I said, your comments and suggestions are always welcome on our Blog Talk Radio website on Facebook, and you can actually catch me there. It is in the page if you haven't seen it. It's News and Comment Network, Blog Talk Radio, LeVar Evans, and there you will have links to all of our shows as well as upcoming things. You'll find that out there first before you find out anywhere else. And also suggest it to a friend. We're always looking to branch out, and we hope that sometime down the line we do branch out. We've got, if things hold correctly, a lot of big guests coming here soon. So just hang tight and work with us, and just stay with us, and we thank you for your support, and I do promise you that we'll be doing a lot more shows down the line here. I know with summer coming, most of the time there's scheduling, and then there's always things that kind of happen, but we definitely want to provide more for you and at least provide it more consistently so that you'll have a place to come to online when you don't have time to watch it on TV. And so with that, I will say thank you so much for listening. I am LeVar Evans, and if you are going to our website, I will announce to you also that we'll be back here tomorrow, not with an edition of Eye on Hollywood, but with a edition of News and Comment. So, rarity indeed. So until then, I am LeVar. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you tomorrow.